Hello, this is Areski Daoud of Mary Risk LLC, and I'm also the editor of the North Africa Journal. Today is the 17th of July, 2020. Now, this brief podcast is an update on what we are seeing in North Africa and the Sahel in this midpoint of the month of July. The region is experiencing tumultuous events as the summer evolves. At this stage, it's clear to us that the fall season is expected to be intense. There were at least five major events and flashpoints that dominated the front pages of the news this week. The first being, obviously, the COVID-19 epidemic. Secondly, the Libyan crisis. Third, the Tunisian political crisis. Fourth, the turmoil in Mali. And finally, the rising tension between Algeria and Morocco. Let me begin with what is obviously the common and shared problem in the region, and that is the COVID-19 epidemic, which, by the way, shows no sign of easing. The worsening spread of the virus was predicted by the scientific and public health communities, but the understandable rush to reopen the economy has had rather adverse effects, and so now we're witnessing new clusters, a virus that is expanding geographically, and contamination rates that are on the rise across the region. This week alone, the northern Moroccan city of Tangiers returned to lockdown mode weeks after the government announced the easing of the nationwide restrictions imposed back in March 2020. New infection clusters appeared when the city reopened its cafes and restaurants in June and resumed domestic tourism. This is the very same approach taken by leading industrial nations, at least the United States for sure, and that led to the disaster we are seeing now. The resumption of the upward movement of the so-called infection curve in Morocco is not just affecting Tangiers. Tangiers being an iconic city, it is easy to talk about it to illustrate the extent of the problem. But other cities are experiencing similar trends. In Safi, for example, authorities reported an outbreak inside a fish canning factory that resulted in the lockdown of the city with more than 250,000 residents. Obviously, a city like Tangiers is densely populated, and therefore the spread can and does happen rapidly. Yet there is something devious about this virus that sometimes even social distancing is being challenged by the strength of COVID-19. We're always told that physical distancing helps stop the propagation of the virus, but Mary's analysts found that the pandemic in Algeria is expanding in the southern Sahara provinces faster than in the populous center and north. The southern zone has now a rate of 46.56 cases per 100,000 inhabitants, closely followed by the central region at 46.26. At least two southern provinces, those of Ouargla and El Oued, were in the top seven provinces with the largest number of new cases during the period of 25 June to the 9 July. The top seven provinces with the highest infection rates are Sétif in the east, that is the northeast, Algiers in the north central, Oran in the northwest, Blida in the north central. Those are coastal cities, by the way. You also have Batna in the east, and then you have Ouargla and El Oued, both in the south. Also, several provinces in the south are among the 22 provinces that are experiencing a rate of increase in infections higher than the national average, estimated at 44 cases per 100,000 residents. Now, of course, one cannot do any more physical distancing than in the Sahara. Plenty of land, very few people, yet the most disturbing rates of infection increases recorded recently in Algeria range from 42.7% in the coastal city of Djigil to a stunning 209.1% in the sparsely populated province of Elizi in the southeast along the Libya border. Eight provinces experienced an increase in their morbidity twice the national rate. Among them are the Saharan provinces of Elizi, as I said, 209.1%, and El Oued. There's also Tamanrasset at 124%, and Laghouat at 94%. With that being said, COVID-19 right now is front and center in terms of the most disrupting problem across the entire region. Now, the second major flashpoint in the region is obviously Libya. On the geopolitical front, things have gotten worse. But if there is anything good about this crisis, is that finally those who operated behind the scenes for so many years, hiding behind proxies and mercenaries and others, are now operating in the open. Not only countries like the UAE, Egypt, Russia, Turkey, France, and others were manipulating key stakeholders in Libya, such as the unsettling and creepy personality of Lord Khalifa Haftar, but now they are directly involved on the ground. The bad thing is that after years of verbally fighting each other, now Egypt and Turkey appear to have the opportunity to face off on the Libyan territory, and that is obviously bad news. Now, just this week, the so-called Libyan parliament, known as the House of Representatives, based in Tobruk and essentially supporting Haftar, has passed a motion authorizing Egypt to intervene militarily if needed. Now, by needed, they mean if Haftar continues to lose ground, the Tobruk parliament would then call on Egypt's strongman, Sisi, to send troops and start a war with Turkey. Egypt, specifically, has been making a lot of noise as Haftar's troops began to weaken and retreat. After throwing support to Haftar, al-Sisi warned that Egypt was willing to send troops into Libya if Haftar were to lose the region of Sirte. And so the region of Sirte appears to be some sort of a red line. Last weekend, the Egyptian military flexed its muscles with the Navy, Air Force, and Special Forces staging exercises near the Libyan border. The United Arab Emirates was also vocal and rather direct this week when it warned the Libyan government of Tripoli not to move any further towards Sirte. The GNA did not like what was coming from Cairo and characterized Sisi's statements as a declaration of war. The GNA said it has no intention of backing down and its forces will continue their move toward Sirte. On Thursday, 16th of July, that is yesterday, al-Sisi doubled down on his threat to send troops to Libya using Arab nationalism to stir passion among his Arab allies. Sisi is now turning this conflict into an Arab versus Turkish confrontation, and apparently he received the support of tribal leaders from eastern Libya that he met this week in Cairo. Speaking to the Financial Times, Turkey's foreign minister hinted that his country won't back down either and has said that the GNA, that is the government that it supports in Tripoli, is determined to resume its offensive against Haftar's forces if they do not retreat from Sirte and signaled that Turkey would be willing to support such offensive. Turkey insisted that the GNA won't agree with a ceasefire until Haftar's forces withdraw from the western regions, including Sirte. And so now we are in showdown mode, with the conflict in Libya moving into a new phase where overt and direct involvement of regional powers risk escalating into a full-blown war. The situation is so dire that all parties in the conflict have been building up their military presence, and that does not bode well for Libya, that does not bode well for the Maghreb in general, and of course, for the Mediterranean zone. Now let's move to Tunisia, where a political crisis has culminated this week with Prime Minister Elias Fakhfakh's resignation, as the country remains deeply troubled on the socio-economic front. On Wednesday, Fakhfakh submitted his resignation after less than 5 months in office as a result of a political feud with the Islamist party Ennahda, whose leader presides over the country's parliament. Ennahda has been making allegations of conflict of interest against the outgoing Prime Minister, who was likely asked by the president to resign. The crisis in Tunisia means the country will remain unstable for a while. Not only the president has 10 days to find a replacement, but political stakeholders in Tunisia disagree over almost everything that any candidate to prime minister will have enormous difficulties creating a consensus on any issue. The country is literally split into a very strong conservative movement headed by the powerful Ennahda party, and a number of weaker secular parties. And these two groups often do not see eye to eye on the way forward and on policy matters. While the political crisis persists, the country is facing major economic and social turmoil. The economic crisis is hitting the southern regions the hardest, and the level of despair among the population is such that protesters on Thursday this week forced their way into an oil production site in Kamour, located in Tatawin in the southeast. The demonstrators managed to overcome the soldiers securing the area. The region has been facing economic turmoil, and a 2017 government pledge to invest millions on economic development in the region fell short, considering the instability in the government, combined with the impact of the pandemic more recently. The region produces small quantities of crude oil in fields operated by Austria's OMV, Italy's Eni, and the Anglo-Tunisian oil and gas. Now, as for the Malian crisis, it has dominated the news coming from the Sahel region. The basics of the crisis in Mali are no different than what is happening elsewhere in the region, starting with bad governance, foreign interference, non-existent economy, terrorism, ethnic conflicts, and obviously the environment, that are conspiring to make the entire Sahel region a deeply unstable zone, and Mali is one of the worst hit nations. The despair of the Malian people led opposition groups to push for protests demanding the resignation of President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. Recent protests in Bamako turned extremely violent and deadly, resulting in 11 deaths and 158 injured. Today, Friday the 17th of July, was scheduled to be another day of rage, but the Malian opposition alliance that is demanding the stepping down of President Keita has called off the protest after a mediation mission led by former Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan arrived in Bamako to help de-escalate the tension. Finally, we're concerned about a rise in tension between Algeria and Morocco on a series of issues, the latest of which is about the construction by Morocco of a military base near the border with Algeria. Algerian officials have called the move a provocative one, but days later, the Moroccan media published satellite photos of what appears to be Algerian military bases near the border with Morocco. Algeria did not comment about the photos, although I still believe that the aggressive back and forth between Morocco and Algeria is not a major concern. The two have been building up military assets, spending billions on weapons, money that could be used obviously for economic development when they needed the most. As I pointed out in my introduction, these events mean that the fall season could bring more trouble to the region. On the socioeconomic front, there is already stress over the reopening of schools. There is an ongoing debate and the positions we are seeing are fairly similar to what we're seeing in Western countries, where some in governments are under pressure to reopen schools, while others, in particular teachers' unions, say they are frightened at the prospect of returning to school while COVID-19 remains a real and present danger. These are obviously arguments that are being made in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Egypt in particular. The fall season also tends to see a resumption of labor unrest. It remains to be seen whether this year labor unions will be able to resume their demands considering the coronavirus, in particular in Algeria and Morocco, while in Tunisia unions have been and are still more vocal and more active than anywhere else. In contrast, unions in Egypt are a lot less relevant in a country where the military does not allow union activity and also owns a big chunk of the Egyptian economy. Of course, it also remains to be seen how the Libyan crisis will unfold. A lot of analysts predict that there will be no confrontation between Egypt and Turkey. But then again, there has been pent-up anger and frustration on all sides, and so I'm not entirely confident that Sisi and Erdogan will restrain themselves. So I do see the potential for a coalition of Gulf countries and France, with its hawkish and aggressive foreign minister Jean-Yves Le Drian convincing Egypt to send troops. One of the main reasons why they may select to further destabilize Libya is that the crisis in neighboring Tunisia appears to pave the way for a stronger Islamist Nahda party, which managed to oust the liberal prime minister Farfar. The issue here is that the Nahda has always been pro-Muslim Brotherhood, and that annoys the likes of Sisi, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia. The strengthening of Ennahda is likely to stimulate more aggressive response from the Gulf and Egypt, and Libya could pay the ultimate price for it. So I hope this provided a brief overview of what is taking place in North Africa and the Sahel this mid-July. Until our next podcast, stay safe and remain positive.